You're listening to Rosie on the House.
Come on around back, Arizona. It is the 8 o'clock hour. It is the fourth Saturday of the month. That means we are with the ever encouraging GP.
Friendly. I'm very friendly.
Friendly, encouraging. Greg Peterson, otherwise known as Farmer Greg.
Woohoo!
And this Saturday to talk urban farming. Thank you for joining us in studio. And we've got a lot about citrus today.
Yeah, well, a lot about fruit trees. This is fruit tree season for us. And the citrus won't quite be here yet, but we're toward the end of the deciduous. And we've got lots of peaches, apricots, plums, pomegranates, figs, grapes. We've got all those available.
Excellent. And last Saturday when Jay was in, we were talking a lot about tomatoes. And if you took his advice and you got your gardens ready, you can go get a little more hands-on, because we have a few things that come in with tomatoes. You got the blossom end rot.
Calcium in the hole.
Calcium. There's a couple little things, and that tomatoes are a good challenge. They're not your radishes. They're not your okra.
Right. Yeah, tomatoes are a bit challenging. And the best time to grow tomatoes is right now. We have one good window for tomatoes, and it's January through about June, the end of June, maybe beginning of July. Trying to grow them in the fall is really hard, but right now it's a great time.
And I'm a little curious on this. Tell me a little bit more about it. Well, you're making your own hydroponic setup?
Yeah. It's a 5-gallon, 2 5-gallon buckets, with the wicking bed being in the top bucket. And in the bottom bucket, that's where you put your water and nutrients is go in the bottom. And the water wicks up into the second bucket and into the top bucket and waters the roots of the tomatoes. It's really innovative. It's really cool.
Now, neither one of us are a lot of gizmo type person, but we're gadget people when it comes to food preparation.
And we've that's true.
I brought you dehydrator last year. You borrowed our combination 3-in-1. It's a
juicer.
It's a juicer. It's an apple slicer. The next one on my list, though, that I want to get before our peppers and our tomatoes come to harvest. Have you seen Lehman's squeeze strainer food mill? You just put your tomatoes, your peppers up here in this funnel, crank the handle, and your salsa comes out into everything into your salsa. You just grind it up in one, and it comes out.
Yeah.
That's next at the Whitman plantation.
Yeah, cool.
And how fun will that be that everything is grown on your own property?
Mm-hmm.
Take it in, put it in your food mill, you've got your fresh salsa right there.
Yeah. Love it. Well, tomatoes grow pretty dang prolifically here. You got to do it right.
Excellent.
So you got to do it right. And there's three common things at home that you put in the hole. Check out.
And that's not the French fries and tomato, is it?
No.
Have you seen that plant they've got?
Oh, yeah. No. That's a different plant. I'm talking about when you plant your plant. One of the things, I'll give you a hint. For growing the tomato, one of the things you put down in there is a banana peel. Potassium, baby.
Okay.
That helps it grow. There's a couple other things that you can put in the hole that will have them grow better. Here's another tomato tip for you. You know those hairs on the stem of a tomato? Those will turn into roots if you bury them. So often what I'll do is I'll let the tomatoes grow to 18 inches, and I'll bury them deep. So you can actually bury it. If you have an 18-inch tall tomato, you can put 9 inches of it underground. And I just pinch off any branches that are on there, put the leaves in the hole, bury it 9-10 inches deep. And it makes for a much stronger, longer living tomato plant.
Very cool.
Yeah, you have a strange look on your face. Like, are you sure, Peterson?
Well, I'm trying to picture burying it 9 inches. That's a
It's deep.
That's a hole.
Yeah. Well, and a friend of mine, Michael Abelman over at Fairview Gardens, when I met him in 2004, he was deep tomato planting. So what he would do is he would grow them out all winter in the greenhouse and get them 4 feet tall. And then he would put 3 feet of them underground.
Just bury the whole plant.
Bury the whole plant underground, exactly. And the reason he would do that, they were doing some dry farming there. You know, in California, mm-hmm. It's a little bit drier, and so they were doing dry farming. And by planting the tomato that deep, it gets the moisture for 3 feet of moisture.
So he's growing the tomato plant to 4 feet. So was he digging in a 7 foot hole?
No, he's okay. Digging a 3 foot
hole.
Yeah, 3 foot deep.
So he's burying almost half of the plant.
Over half. 4 foot.
Four foot
tall plant.
And it's a 3 foot.
Foot underground. Yeah.
75% of the plant.
Yeah, 75% of the ground. Okay. Exactly. It's a it's a really effective way of growing tomatoes.
I had never heard that. Yeah. So. All right, you got it.
Good. I'm patting myself on the back here.
You should. That's stunning to me too. The hairs on a stem.
The hairs
of
on
a tomato
stem
plant
will turn into roots.
You got to stop doing these classes on Saturdays. I've worked Saturdays.
Oh, I know. That's whenever most, you know, we do on Friday. We do Friday tours.
Okay.
At the Urban Farm.
Yes.
We'll
but
have
you
Friday
didn't do a tomato.
Tours.
You didn't do these classes on.
That's true. That's true. I'm working on a plan, though. You know me. I'm always working on something.
Get them videotaped, and then I can watch them online for signing up or something later.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Now, we do have citrus on the talking point to today, and you just grabbed this book.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I love citrus, and, you know, I've lived here in Arizona for 52 years this year. Is that amazing? 52 years this August I've lived in Arizona, and I've been 30 years this September at the Urban Farm. And one of the things that I love is citrus, and, you know, people, when I talk to them about planting citrus, it's like, I don't need any more citrus, because they're thinking Arizona sweets, yellow grapefruits, and lemons. And mostly it's Arizona sweets and the yellow grapefruits that have been grown for over 100 years here. And that's what everybody has. But there is such a variety, an amazing variety of other different fruits that we'll talk about here in a little while that, you know, they just knock your socks off. They're so great. So I really invite you to explore what other kind of citrus you might want to grow.
Okay. And there are no shortage of selections.
I don't know that I'd go there. our biggest problem is that we have...
of options. You have lots of options.
Well, yeah. So here, you remember this book from last year, The Citrus Industry? This is a tome. This thing has 600 pages in it. And each one of these orange tabs is a page explaining a one of the varieties. So this one says large round kumquat, and it has pages. It has pages on kumquats, and so literally there are hundreds of different varieties, maybe even thousands of different varieties of citrus that are explained in this book.
And that looks like one of those great old school textbooks.
Yeah, so copyright
pre-60s,
$10, $10 in it. It's 1964, 67. Yeah. 1967. It's called The Citrus Industry, Volume 1. This book talks about all of the known citrus varieties. So I like to use it for, backup research. But we really only have one commercial grower here in the state.
Wow.
Yeah, and we can talk more about that after the break.
Of all the citrus, only one local company.
One local company there in Yuma, Sunset Citrus Nursery. They're great, but, you know, with the whole citrus psyllid thing going on, citrus greening disease, it made it hard for growers to actually commercially grow.
Interesting.
Because I don't know if I told you this. My company, GrowPHX, you can find it at growphx.com. We just bought a $12,000 hammer mill We bought it used, but they're $12,000 new, and it's for milling carob flour and milling mesquite flour. And so in May and June of this year, we're going to be actually doing public millings where people can collect their beans, and we'll teach you how to do that in April and May. You go out and collect your beans, process, you know, prep them for us, then you bring them to us, and we'll mill them into flour for you.
So I could bring all of my mesquite pod droppings,
yep.
Do the process.
Yep.
Do you have to take them out of there?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. We mill the whole pod.
Whole pod.
You just have to dry them out. So you have to put them in your dehydrator, stick them in your oven, leave them in your car for a week in June, so that they just, you know, basically you need to have them
dry. Just need
dry.
Them dried out. Okay.
Yeah, you need to have them dried
Very
out.
Very cool. Now, this is a new thing.
Yeah.
How many pounds of beans? What does a pound of bean pods equate to flour? Is that like 2 cups of flour?
Well, if you're talking poundage, a pound of beans is going to make a pound of flour.
It will.
Ish.
Okay. All right. Well, we're talking with Farmer Greg here at Rosie on the House. Fourth Saturday of the month, we spend it in the urban farm. If you have a question or would like to join the conversation, 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Text questions to 411-923. You can email us if you need to snap a picture of an insect or plant to help, or something else to help describe what it is you are trying to accomplish in your urban farm. You can send that to info@rosieonthehouse.com.